And now we have two special visitors sharing with us from some of the early history of our church.
In the early 1800s, more and more pioneer families were settling in central New York. As small communities were formed, church groups would gather together, meeting in the new school building or in the members' homes. Just after the Harvest Revival in the West Danby Church in 1821, a group of members, 17 women and 6 men, were granted letters of dismissal in order to form a new church in Danby near their homes. They were given formal recognition by the churches in West Danby, Trumansburg, Enfield, and Dryden. And the following year, with some 30 members, they became a part of the Seneca Baptist Association. 5 years later, it was voted almost unanimously that the group should move to the newly booming village of Ithaca, since many of its members were already living there. In mid-October 1826, they adopted the name of the First Baptist Church of Christ in Ithaca and met for the first time at the Tompkins County Courthouse, the site of the present old courthouse.
Really, 17 women and 6 men? In 1826, Ithaca was a prosperous, bustling community of 2,000 souls. The War of 1812 and the new Erie Canal had given it prosperity and a new importance. It centered about 2 east-west streets, now State and Seneca, which ended in swamplands a few blocks westward. All commerce and manufacturing was located on Aurora Street between Cascadilla and Six Mile Creek gorges. There was a village common following the New England pattern of a central enclosure for the community's livestock, which is now, as we know, DeWitt Park. The Presbyterian Church and the courthouse, with their white pillars, faced southward onto the common.
A more auspicious time for the establishment of the new church could hardly have been chosen. According to a history of the church, Ithaca was in the midst of what was long remembered as the Great Revival of 26. Never, it is said, has Ithaca been as penetrated by the spirit of religious fervor. All denominations participated. All classes were profoundly moved. Religion was the topic of conversation on the street corners. Prayer meetings were extemporized in stores, kitchens, and yards. Into such an atmosphere as this was, the new and weak Baptist enterprise transplanted. As a consequence, it was much revived and strengthened. Every Sunday after preaching, they went to the waters of one of the creeks for baptisms.
The older, more conservative denominations in Ithaca, particularly the Presbyterian Church next door to the courthouse, did not welcome the upstart little Baptist church with its odd baptisms and democratic ideas. As in other communities of that day, Baptists were regarded with deep suspicion. In Ithaca, they encountered strong opposition and were ridiculed and reviled by the community in general.
Fortunately, their leader that first year was an outstanding man, the Reverend O.C. Comstock of Trumansburg, who had suggested their move to Ithaca and who came every other Sunday to preach at the courthouse. Mr. Comstock had both a legal and a medical education and was also the doctor in Trumansburg. His qualities of leadership had made him the first judge in Tompkins County in 1817 and had taken him to the state assembly and to 3 terms in Congress, where he had also been chaplain of the House of Representatives in later years. After being baptized in Washington, he refused a 4th term in Congress to come back and organize 3 new churches in this area as a missionary for Baptist State Convention. 1 son followed him as a doctor in Trumansburg. A 2nd, Grover Comstock, was a celebrated missionary in Burma. Another, son of this early Baptist group, was also a missionary in Burma. Thomas Stowe Rainey was a close friend of and printer for Adoniram Judson, that great pioneer in Burma. Rainey was also with Judson on Judson's final voyage overseas and was the one who buried him at sea. Julius Rainey, his father, was the church clerk of the original Danby group and a member of the first board of trustees in the Ithaca Church.
In 1827, the New Ithaca Church had as its pastor the Reverend John Sears, and a board of trustees was elected according to statute law with the purpose of securing church property on which to erect a meeting house. The land on which the present church stands was purchased for $300 from Adam Young and his wife, Laney, and on land owned by Elder Sears. There followed a 4-year struggle to secure funds for the new building, which was completed in 1831. Young Ezra Cornell, who walked over the brow of East Hill for his first view of Ithaca, carrying his spare clothing and carpenter's tools wrapped in a bundle, was employed on his 2nd job here in building the new First Baptist Church.
Thank you so much, Lil and Rich. That's very interesting. Here is your ghost moderator. I'm very glad to be here, and I'm grateful to Debbie for inviting me to the pulpit to give my moderator's musings. This is a somewhat revised version of something I wrote for The Visitor, which was supposed to come out but didn't, and so I revised it again. Anyway, this will end up in a Visitor, and I believe it was Andre Mooney, suggested that one way for you to get to know me a little better is to continue these moderator musings, and when I sat down to think what I would write about, this is what happened, and I think I'm going to continue trying to explore the history of this congregation. It's become sort of an obsession of mine. So today we're beginning our official celebration of the founding of our church in 1821, 200 years ago. I've been trying to get my mind around the notion of 200 years. One way for me to do that is to think of my own ancestors. For instance, my mother's mother was born in 1898, and her mother, my great-grandmother, was born in 1871, so that's 50 years later than the founding of this church. I was blessed to know my grandmother, who lived to be 93 years old, and my mother can tell me stories about my great-grandmother because my mother knew her. At this point, however, my family's oral history becomes less clear. My mother knows that my great-great-grandmother died when my great-grandmother was 9 years old. Through genealogy research, we've determined that my great-great-grandmother died in 1881 at the age of 33, which means she was born in 1848. The point of this exercise in family history is to show that I have to go back 5 or 6 generations in my family to get to the year 1821, the year our church was born. What do we know about our church family story? How many generations back can our current collective memory take us? Among our current membership, I know of one person who remembers the pastorate of Reverend William Hicks, who served our church from 1949 to 1956. A few among us may remember Reverend Christian Jensen, who served from 1957 to 1966. And more of us will remember the years when Reverend David Evans was our pastor. And still more of us will remember the years when Reverend Wendy Fambro and then Reverend Rich Rose served our church. Now we are creating new stories with our pastor, Reverend Debbie Bennett Reynolds. How can we learn more about the first 50 or first 100 years of our church's story? Is it even important to know about those years? I think it's important to know what we can about those early years. Scholars who study congregations and congregational life have discovered that the foundational stories of a church family will continue to express themselves throughout the church's life. Thankfully, there are some written records about our church family archived at Cornell and at the American Baptist Historical Society. And we have Linda Coy to thank for keeping our history together and getting that to the archives at Cornell. We also have histories about Ithaca and New York State, and we have histories about Baptists and about religion in the U.S. And we also have a brief history of our church on the church's website. I encourage you to read it if you haven't already. The opening sentence of our website history tells us that our church was founded after the harvest season of 1821 by 23 people in Danby, New York. There is more to this story. In a history of our church written by Reverend Herman Titus in 1877, he tells us that, and this is a quote, in the annals of the Spencer Baptist Church, it is recorded that in the year 1821, just subsequent to the harvest revival of that year, 27 members were granted letters for the purpose of forming a church in Danby. So I have yet to figure out how to reconcile the 27 and the 23. So did 4 people decide not to continue? Their letters were dismissed and they moved somewhere else, or they passed away? I don't know. So to say our church was founded after the harvest season, which is what our website says, is not the same as saying our church was founded after a harvest revival. And I would suspect that's because many of us are somewhat uncomfortable with the word revival and its connotations. As it turns out, our church came into existence during a period in U.S. religious history known as the Second Great Awakening. It was a religious and spiritual revival which attracted new members principally to Baptist and Methodist churches. How do we want to narrate our church's history? What aspects of our history do we want to describe? What aspects of our history would we prefer to leave out? This past spring, the Ithaca campus of Cornell University acknowledged that its buildings and grounds are located on the traditional homelands of the Gayukono, or the Cayuga Nation. The Cayuga Nation are members of an alliance of 6 sovereign nations known as the Haudenosaunee Confederacy. The presence of the Gayukono people, past and present, on these lands and waters predates the establishment of Ithaca, New York State, and the USA. Would our church family be willing to acknowledge this aspect of our history? What, if anything, can we learn about our early church members' stance toward slavery and black persons? In 1821, slavery was still legal in New York State and in the U.S. Slavery was not abolished in New York until July 4th of 1827. Were any of our early church members slaveholders? Were they abolitionists? Did any of our church members fight for the Union during the Civil War? In the 1877 history written by Reverend Titus, he mentions a pastorate held by Mr. Calvin Filio from 1833 to 1834. According to Reverend Titus, Mr. Filio was one of the earliest abolitionists and of the most radical order. That's all it says. And he only was here for a year, and it says that he moved on to continue his abolition ministries in this part of the, I guess actually he went other places. He was in New York, but he was also in Connecticut. This past Thursday evening, I discovered an article in Wikipedia about a place called New York Central College, which was active from 1849 to 1860. This college was founded by anti-slavery Baptists, and it was located in McGraw, New York, where Ann and Steve Farrell, wherever they are right in front of me, currently reside. And Ann was telling me some really interesting stories yesterday about the church in McGraw that she grew up in. Were there any connections between the Baptists in McGraw and the Baptists in Ithaca during the early years of our church? I don't know. During the coming year, as we celebrate the past, present, and future of this church family, I'm hoping to dig a bit more into the early years of our church's history. If any of you would like to help with this project, please let me know. I'm certain there is a lot of interesting information to discover.
Thank you, Margie. So I told Shella not to print the scripture text in your bulletin because you would not have had a bulletin in 1820s, and also because I think it's good sometimes to just hear, as they would have, just hear it. As we think about our history, the scripture that came to mind is Hebrews chapter 12. Chapter 11 is this long, long, long litany of all sorts of heroes of faith that come out through the Hebrew scriptures. And then in chapter 12, the writer of Hebrews says, and I'm just going to read a few verses through the chapter, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin that clings so closely, and let us run with perseverance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith, who for the sake of the joy that was set before him endured the cross, disregarding its shame, and has taken his seat at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider Jesus, who endured such hostility against himself from sinners, so that you may not grow weary or lose heart. Therefore, lift your drooping hands and strengthen your weak knees and make straight paths for your feet, so that what is lame may not be put out of joint, but rather be healed. Pursue peace with everyone and the holiness without which no one will see God. See to it that no one fails to obtain the grace of God, that no root of bitterness springs up and causes trouble, and through it many become defiled. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, let us give thanks, by which we offer to God an acceptable worship with reverence and awe. For indeed, our God is a consuming fire." In 1821, this was still the frontier, part of a rough, physically and emotionally challenging, even dangerous place to live. The settlement here was part of a movement of white settlers across after the American Revolutionary War and the War of 1812. Tragically, as Margie's already alluded to, the Cayuga Nation, Native Americans, were mostly driven off these lands a few years earlier. We will come back to that later this fall. Simeon DeWitt and others were pushing hard to create a town here in the Flats, as they called it, at the head of Cayuga Lake. But in 1821, that little group of Baptists that formed a church in Danby had no idea that Ithaca was going to be bigger than Danby. Have you driven through Danby lately? I now do it every day. There's not even a gas station, really, in Danby. I wish there was. But within just 5 years, they realized that Ithaca was the town that was growing, and they decided to move here. I've been reading a bit in the history of Ithaca that I think Myra gave to me when I came. In those early years, Ithaca was a tough town. It was nicknamed Sodom and Sin City. Because of the behavior of wagon teamsters and barge operators who came in and out, sometimes by the hundreds, as loads of salt and other good were brought by barge down the lake and then loaded onto wagons and transported on down south to places like Philadelphia and Baltimore. There were taverns full of drunk men. There were street fights on a regular basis, all sorts of other wild behavior we can speculate about, along with the pigs and the cows and the muddy streets. There was often conflict between these laborers and transients coming and going and the settlers who were trying to build homes and businesses here. There was a group called the Moral Society for a little while that was sort of a vigilante group that went around, and if someone was acting up, they would mete out some punishment to try to bring them in line, throwing them in swamp and things like that. It was into this volatile mix, as in so many other places in early 19th century America, that the fiery winds of revival preaching and the powerful movement of the Spirit came. Again, as Margie said, we call it the Second Great Awakening, and it's generally considered sometime from around 1790 to about 1840. And central and western New York came to be known as the Burnt Over District because of the number of revival movements and other spiritual movements that happened across this region. Everything from Baptists and Methodists and Presbyterians having revivals, but also things like the Latter-day Saints, Joseph Smith, the Shakers, other spiritualists, all sorts of things. The fact that many of us don't realize that I remember hearing in my church history class in seminary was that early 19th century America was highly unchurched, especially on the frontier. Alcohol abuse, domestic violence, lack of law and order were common in many places. But the Spirit of God moved in that time. There were powerful preachers like Charles Finney, who traveled the country preaching to mass gatherings, and local pastors seized the moment to bring people to faith and into their congregations. In those preaching, there was a strong emphasis on the personal relationship with God, but there was also concern for social reform, like the temperance movement about alcohol abuse, the abolition of slavery, and also a real focus on the building of schools and hospitals and other institutions that would make communities better for everyone. But I think it's worth taking a minute to pause. Did you hear that description of what that revival of 26 was like in the little village of Ithaca? People talking about religion on street corners, prayer meetings in stores and kitchens and yards, the sounds of people crying out in prayer all hours of the night, and weekly conversions followed by baptisms, by the Baptists at least, right here in the creeks. We would probably find it hard to know quite how to respond if that broke out this next week here in Ithaca. And I doubt that many of us may agree with all the theology that was being preached in the 1820s or their style. And yet, They are our spiritual ancestors. They are the reason we are here today. That fire of the Spirit, that revival fervor, is what gave this church and other churches the faith and the people they needed to grow. They were able to survive and thrive and become the congregations we know that have shaped the lives of the people who are part of them and this community for generations after. They're part of our great cloud of witnesses. I love that image. All of their spirits maybe are especially close today. Picture it, right? All of them kind of looking down on us right now, watching us as we celebrate and watching us run our race as we live our lives. Their faithful lives and the faith of all those who have been part of this church since then are the reason we are still here today. And the fire of God's Spirit has kept reviving this church again and again. They say any church to survive has to go through a major reformation about every 40 years or so. How many of those have we had to have to get through 200? We can think about all they went through. Fires, floods were terrible in Ithaca in the early years. Bitter winters, hot summer days without air conditioning or even electricity, a civil war, other wars, economic booms and busts, epidemics like polio and measles and the Spanish flu. And yes, KKK marches where Wegmans now stands. Struggles for justice and civil rights for women, for African Americans, for all people. The fire of the Spirit of God and their love of Jesus Christ has empowered each generation to live by faith. That is what made them who they were. Of course, they were people of their times, just as we are. They were limited, blind to some issues that we see today, and yet they too walked by faith just as we do. They can inspire us to run with perseverance the race that is set before us, to lift our drooping hands and strengthen our weak knees, to pursue peace and holiness, to see that no one fails to know the grace of God and that no root of bitterness springs up and causes trouble. Instead, we are knowing that we are receiving a kingdom, a reign of God that cannot be shaken. Let us give thanks with reverence and awe. For indeed, our God is a consuming fire. And that fire, the fire of God's Spirit, burns in us too. That fire, that faith is still here for us and for the challenges and the opportunities of the next generation of our life together as First Baptist Church. Thanks be to God.